to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is a message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Travel increases your chance of getting and spreading COVID-19. Take steps to protect yourself and others. Don't travel while sick. Avoid contact with anyone who is sick. Wear a mask to keep your nose and mouth covered when in public. Avoid close contact by staying at least 6 feet or about 2 arms' length from anyone who is not from your household. Wash your hands often or use hand sanitizer with at least 60% alcohol. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth, and watch your health during and after travel. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19.
Common sense, everybody. Yes, that's what we do here at WUSB Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock. It's a Tuesday evening, and that means it's time once again for another exciting episode of Off the Wall. And good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, hello. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. It's been an action-packed week so far. A lot of preparation for various things and just a lot of hard work. And it feels good, you know?
Heavy lifting.
Yeah, not so much actual physical heavy lifting, but yeah, heavy lifting of a sort. Mm-hmm. And I always feel better having done that. But yeah, you know, the PSA we just played, such common sense, isn't it? You know, if you're sick, don't travel. If you're sick, don't infect other people around you. And yet, you know, what's with all these crazy-ass demonstrations that are going on? I mean, there was one in, was it in D.C. with Robert Kennedy Jr.?
I heard he was speaking somewhere, yeah.
Oh, my God, what an idiot.
Okay,
you know, for those of you who think that I come out, you know, too favorably for Democrats, no, I don't, okay? I'm just anti-idiot, and right now there's a lot of idiotic Republicans running around out there. We'll get to that, but here's an idiotic... I assume he's a Democrat. He's RFK, you know, RFK's son. Wouldn't he be a Democrat? You know, maybe I'm making an assumption here, but he's an idiot. That's indisputable. He said at this this rally, first of all, anti-vax rallies. Think about that for a second. That's about as dumb as you can get. You're not in favor of a vaccination, and you're going to congregate together with other people who don't believe in vaccinating against deadly pandemics. Boy, what do you think's going to happen from that? I don't know. Anyway, so he's addressing this crowd, and he I don't have the exact quote in front of me. I don't need the exact quote in front of me because I get the gist of it. Basically, making the Holocaust comparison, which is about the most idiotic, offensive thing you can do, comparing Dr. Fauci with some kind of Nazi doctor, you know, as if the two periods in history have anything at all similar. But basically, going a step further and saying that, you know, the Holocaust was actually better. And bringing up Anne Frank and her family, saying at least you could hide from them. At least you could hide from the Nazis. You know, Robert, did you finish reading the diary? Did you finish the history course about World War II and the Holocaust? You couldn't hide. And many, many people were not able to hide. And you're just a dumbass of the highest order. I feel bad wasting time talking about this. But, boy, what an idiot. And there are so many idiots out there who are making this completely unwarranted comparison and making it seem like somehow, because they want to make a bad decision, that equates them with people who have been victimized for centuries and murdered and unable to make any kind of change to themselves to make that go away, because that is how hatred works.
I just don't like that I have to spread it and have other people be involved in what they are clearly making as a choice in themselves. Their influence telling other people that may have a very visceral reaction to that historic event. They may have ties or have heard really graphic stories of how things went down, and personally then associating that with something that actually isn't the same at all, and is in fact an ongoing crisis that we're trying to get good information out there about. And could make gatherings of large people safer,
exactly,
than the opposite. It's just so reckless and selfish, and just to be right when you're not. And
look, we've done a lot of things in the past couple of years. We've been to weddings. We've been to Black Lives Matter marches. We've been to the Steve Colbert show. We've been to a baseball game. All kinds of things that we have done. We've traveled across the whole damn country. And we haven't caught COVID because we've taken the precautions, because we're aware of the situation, because we wear masks when appropriate, we get vaccinated when it's needed. And if everybody did that, we wouldn't be in nearly the same state that we're in right now, and a whole lot of people would be alive who are not. This pandemic, listening to these people, you would think the pandemic was deliberate and planned by, well, in most cases, Democrats. I don't know what RFK Jr. is saying, but you know that, what the political people today who are railing against any kind of guideline to protect yourself, you would think that the Democrats invented COVID. You would think that.
Well, and
what just came over the TV?
I was saying that Robert Kennedy apologizes as on a crawl. I don't know if that's part of the story or...
Well, I don't know how much he has to apologize for, but that would be top of the list in my eyes. And if he apologized, great. You know, but you're still a dumbass. Okay, I'm sorry. The fact that that thought bobbed to the top of your head tells me that, you know, there's a lot you don't know and a lot that you're spreading that is completely false and harmful. Because people believe this. People look to leaders and to celebrities, and, you know, even us to a degree, people trust us. That's why we take it very seriously here at WUSB, that we don't say things that are false or not provable or anti-science or all kinds of things like that. Are there exceptions? Yeah, of course there's exceptions. It's up to all of us to call them out when there are. But
well, not with health stuff. I mean, we'll do our best. And
yeah, we certainly are trying.
You know what?
Call us out if we're saying something that is wrong, that's provably wrong. Not, you know, basically, oh, but I heard that 5G is you know, taking over your brain. But please, just spare us the crap, because it's just such a waste of everybody's time. You know, there is so much to examine, to research, investigate further. So much science, so much medicine. You know, it's not all a big conspiracy. If you think that all science and all of medicine is a conspiracy, there's nothing we can say to you. We will never be able to convince you otherwise. It's like, you know, it's like we conjured up somebody from the medieval age. And, you know, are trying to explain computer chips to them. It's not going to take, you know, it's just no way.
It is a sign of a reaction to, like, something you don't understand. You don't think your understanding is going to change. So you cast a certain characterization of something because you don't understand it. That mythology gains traction. You have to substantiate it by having followers of this mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And to what peril? It's not a calculation, because it's about being right in that moment. And you know what else is disappointing? I was thinking as we're talking, they could just get vaccinated and protest this stuff.
Yeah, they could. What I suggested a week or so ago, either on this show or the other one, get vaccinated. And you know, if you turn into a zombie, and you know, 5G takes over your brain, think of the settlement you'll get, because it's going to come out. The truth will come out, and then, you know, you'll be a victim, so you'll be able to collect. Whereas now, yeah, you're not going to get anything. You'll be the person that you know. No, it's ridiculous. It's
well,
stupid.
At least stop spreading it while you're out there among a ton of people.
But they don't care about that, because I don't know what they think. If it's just, it's not so bad, despite, you know, nearly a million people who died, not so bad, or it's not going to affect me because I've already gotten it three times and I'm not going to be able to get it again, or I'm immune from it, or I'm Superman. I don't know what their thinking is. You can't reason with them. You just can't.
Well, you can still protest, and that's why the comparison doubly does not work.
Mm-hmm. More than 200 people rallied outside of Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, the moron's office. This is the new guy, the Republican who got elected simply because he was a Republican, not because he had any experience or knowledge or anything like that. People were mad at Democrats because they're being taught that white people are bad. You know, lies like that being spread around. And people believe it. People believe it. We let the Republicans make the narrative. They can do whatever they want. They can say we're, you know, all a bunch of space aliens, you know, descending from Mars that's trying to, you know, install a communist dictatorship. And people will react to that and vote against Democrats as a result.
Yeah,
anyway,
say that while installing one.
These 200 people, they rallied outside, you know, and you'd think they would be rallying outside his office to protest his idiocy. No, they're supporting it. This is part of the issue. I mean, I know many others are too intelligent to be gathering in groups. You can do it safely, though. You can do it safely with masks and without getting too close and all that and being vaccinated. And if you need to express yourself, that is what you should be doing. You know, there was a march on Washington, there's a few of those, in support of overturning Roe versus Wade the other day. You know, the momentum is with these people, but they're still showing up in Washington, D.C. Where are the pro-choice rallies? Why aren't there a million people rallying outside the Supreme Court demanding that the right to abortion be preserved, that Roe versus Wade not be overturned? The fact that we don't do things like this, the fact that we are not angrier and out on the street and making a commotion and being nasty and getting on the news and offending people, the fact that we shy away from all that, that's why we keep losing. We need to stop doing that. I know, COVID, I know it's cold, but, you know, there are ways to conquer these challenges. And the other side, to their credit, they know how to do that. And that's how you get crazy situations like what we're going through right now, because these people keep showing up and making their voices heard and being loud. And that influences the people who are sitting at home, not really participating, but seeing on television, hey, look at all these people that support this. I guess, you know, I want to be in the majority. They must be right. There's so many of them. Anyway, so more than 200 of these people rallied outside his office in Mineola to show support for his opposition to mask mandates, saying they hope he paves the way for other Republican candidates. And that's exactly what he's going to do if we don't step up and do the opposite. Now, this guy took office earlier this month. He signed an executive order basically defying the state law or the state mask mandate, which has since been suspended by another court. This whole thing is just going back and forth. But basically, he was leading this campaign against wearing masks, which is the stupidest thing when you think about it. It's not like people are being told to wear masks just for the fun of it. It's because there's a pandemic out there. Have you forgotten about that? Have you ever acknowledged that in the first place?
It's like, we don't want to wear masks, but then when the businesses have to close because everybody gets sick, then we don't want the businesses closed. So then we don't want to have the businesses closed, so we open the businesses, but then we don't want to have masks. It's just like back and forth and back and forth.
These people have been standing up against vaccines. They've been standing up against masks. They've been standing up against everything that is designed to get us through the pandemic. It's like they want the pandemic to stick around for as long as possible. Meanwhile, stores are going out of business. Yeah, everywhere I'm seeing reduced hours. The damn supermarket we went to the other day, cutting an hour off their opening time. I see restaurants going out of business. This is not because of masks. This is because people aren't showing up because of various reasons related to the pandemic. If we're past the pandemic, this kind of thing doesn't happen as often, or we can start the recovery process. But if you keep ignoring it and pretending there isn't a problem, you're not going to fix anything. You're not going to advance. Anyway, guess who was front and center at that rally? Our friend Representative Lee Zeldin, who does anything but represent the people out here. He is pro-vaccine as much as anybody. Bruce Blakeman is sending pro-virus, not pro-vaccine. Bruce Blakeman is sending a message all throughout New York. There are people in other counties who are watching what Bruce is doing, and they're asking their leadership, why don't you follow the lead of that courageous new county executive in Nassau County, Bruce Blakeman? I mean, what do you say to this? It's so ridiculously stupid that this is what people are focusing on. This is what these people are focusing on. While Blakeman has argued that the county has power to issue the executive order under home rule authority, the Nassau-Suffolk School Boards Association has said he does not have the legal authority to tell schools not to follow a state mandate requiring masks indoors. And beyond that, schools can issue their own mandates, and they can say, if you want to come to school, because of the situation right now, we need you to wear a mask. Simple. And, you know, I got to say, kids don't seem to have a problem with this. Parents of kids, yeah, they're the ones getting in the way as usual and saying, no, my kid will not wear this, even though the kid has no problem wearing it in the first place. You know, I've witnessed this firsthand, where kids are the ones who are most interested in following the guidelines and doing what is safe and helping their neighbors and their friends. We could learn a thing or two or a lot more from the way kids act and not from the way these idiot adults are acting. So, yeah, a lot of idiots out there doing their best to keep the pandemic going. What can I say? We just have to do whatever we can to stay safe and, you know, not cripple ourselves by any means. We want to do as many things out there as possible. We want this to be over. And it only is over when we basically are not having people die every day around us from a preventable virus. It is preventable. If you get a vaccine, you will likely not be hospitalized. And if most of the world gets the vaccine, then the pandemic will go away before another variant pops up. And the next variant could be much worse than Omicron. It could be much deadlier. It could be much more contagious. We don't know. The one thing we do know is that when COVID is defeated, there will be no more variants. Or this might be something we have to live with. And that won't be very pleasant. But the reason that happens, or the reason that might happen, is precisely because of people who don't take it seriously.
There's a lot of interest in really eradicating the coronavirus entirely. And I was seeing some good coverage of interviews with people writing about this stuff in the biomedical industry. And, you know, we should be lauding efforts and getting behind people that are taking an interest in human health and keeping the wider society functional at this crazy moment in time, as many of moments in time are. But I just encourage people to listen and let people talk. People need to vent right now, and there's a lot of confusion, and like I was suggesting, people that are convinced they have it all figured out to whatever peril. But, you know, you don't have to put up with it, and you don't have to just sit idly by just because you are listening, or you know, you're being calm and hearing out the kind of blather that's all around, the sort of snide takes and so forth.
Right.
It's not important. What's important is getting past it and making good choices.
Yeah, don't make it about personalities. If you don't like the way somebody presents the facts, you don't have to listen to them. But listen to the facts. You know, look at what is actually agreed upon by doctors and scientists worldwide who are not all part of some vast conspiracy. Because if they were all part of some vast conspiracy, there wouldn't be any chance of getting past it anyway. But there's no such thing. It's absurd. It's mass media nonsense that people just want to believe, because they want to believe there's some kind of a diabolic scheme out there. Neil Young, he is an outspoken advocate for COVID-19 safety and prevention, doesn't want his music to share a home with vaccine misinformation. In a, for some reason, now-deleted post on his website, Neil Young asked his managers and record label to remove his music from Spotify, because he said the music and podcast platform is spreading fake information about vaccines, potentially causing death to those who believe this disinformation spread by them. I want you to let Spotify know immediately today that I want all my music off their platform. They can have Rogan or Young, not both. Amen.
I think that's so crucial, especially from artists that made their careers with other formats and media, because younger and up-and-coming artists may not be able to sell CDs and albums the same way someone who's had a career over time, and they're really depending on those platforms. But an artist like him saying something like that, he can kind of walk away from it, because it's really a small part of what he's built. And, you know, does he really need whatever pittance they're paying for his stuff to be streamed? It's not even worth it. Not if it's
exactly, yeah.
Not if it's about airing programming that's harmful, and exceedingly stupid.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there is blowback to all the nonsense that's out there, to all the misinformation and hatred and racism and just backwards thinking that seems to be prevailing. But here's a bit of good news. DirecTV is dropping the One America News Network. Yeah, that's that hate channel that is ultra right wing and is just such garbage. And it was a travesty. It was promoted by DirecTV for so long while they were owned by AT&T, which I believe is not the case anymore.
Yeah. Oh, and they have like that bird on their logo. It's like the same bird as the catheter company.
Okay. Wow. Well, AT&T spun off DirecTV last summer, and it accounts for nearly half of the 35 million homes that can receive OAN on cable or satellite TV. It's not broadly distributed enough to be measured by Nielsen. And the loss of DirecTV will deprive the channel of its major source of revenue and cast doubt on the future of the operation. In fact, there was a quote, I think, from its CEO or somebody high up saying a year or two ago that, yeah, if we didn't have DirecTV, we'd be out of business in a week. So yeah, I'm looking to them to hold true to that promise. Yeah. Now, they're not the only conservative outlet losing distribution. Newsmax, the Boca Raton, Florida-based channel, that is the TV home of former President Trump's first press secretary, Sean Spicer, was dropped from four cable systems in January after it failed to reach new carriage agreements with those companies. Unfortunately, Optimum out here on Long Island is not one of them. For some reason, they stick that hate channel right next to Euronews, which, you know, kudos on them for carrying Euronews in the first place, and BBC World News, intelligent things like that, that are not biased, unless you consider just reporting the news to be biased. What those channels do, though, is pure propaganda, and it's not the kind of thing that a free society generally has, is sheer propaganda. Yeah, everything is biased to a degree. Everything is slanted one way or another. There's no question about that. But the type of hatred that is spewed on those ultra-right-wing channels, I mean, this goes beyond anything Fox does, and we know how bad Fox is. So these are good steps. It's not censorship any more than not caring Al Jazeera is saying. Well, you know, Al Jazeera, if you've ever watched Al Jazeera in English, I defy anybody to say that they are biased in an extreme way. They seem very measured and almost middle of the road.
Yeah, come on, give me something a little bit more like...
But nobody will carry them.
I want like some Al Manar or, you know, something a little heavier. Like, it's just, it's light.
Uh-huh. Yosef Gedichu, who is the director of Common Cause Media and Democracy, says the network is a known perpetrator of disinformation and extremism, fueling real-world violence and placing the health and safety of so many in jeopardy. You know, imagine if Proud Boys had their own channel. Hey, they might. I don't know. You know, imagine if there was a Nazi network out there. Would you demand that they carry that, too, out of fairness? No, you have to draw the line somewhere. And they've already jumped well over the line in the kinds of ugly networks that are popping up and the sorts of things that are being espoused in a particular political party these days. How far they go, that's up to the rest of us. They're not going to stop. We have to stop them. You know, the gauntlet has been thrown down. And we can either sit back and just see how bad it gets, which, you know, a lot of people seem content to do. They want to be victims. They want to just say, yeah, look how oppressed I am. This is awful. Another 8 years of Trump. Boy, this country sucks. You know, or you can fight and prevent these sort of things from happening. You can literally get out the vote. You can get all kinds of people involved who would not be involved ordinarily. Or we can just accept, yeah, Roe versus Wade is dead, and we're going to lose the House, and we're going to lose the Senate, and all this bad stuff is going to happen.
No, E, stop helping them. No, you're helping them.
Who am I helping?
No, they have to think of the things to do. It's obvious. It's all the same thing.
Telling them to get off their asses.
As registering, it's following... finance stuff that is involved in campaigns or PACs and you know, being active and in workplaces and out in some of the cultural realms, public places, all of the things. Now I'm listening. Now I'm helping.
Uh-huh.
So, you did this, and I was warning you, and now I'm helping them. It's all about people's initiative, and you know what to do. You don't need our help.
No, people don't know what to do. Everyone is throwing their arms up in the air in despair. What do we do now? We need more organizations, what we need. You know, there are demonstrations and rallies that happen every now and then. We don't know about them. We don't hear about them. They're not talked about. But I always hear about the right-wing ones. I always know that something is going to be happening in D.C. with a bunch of right-wing zealots or religious nuts or whatever. I hear about that, and I only read about other rallies on the other side after they've happened. And that's wrong. We need to get millions of people out there. Because, you know, there are a lot more of us than there are of them. That's indisputable. The voting registration records show you that. But a lot of people don't realize it. It doesn't translate to the organization, to the emotion. We need more of that. Here's something Lee Zeldin, Bruce Blakeman inspired hatred. A pair of Long Island residents allegedly launched into a hate-filled diatribe, insulting a woman's ethnicity, and one of them even threw beer at her aboard a Long Island Railroad train at Penn Station last week. Yeah, the female witness, who was not identified, told Metropolitan Transportation Authority police that Christian DeGesaro of Huntington, in substance, told a woman in the January 10th incident, "You effing immigrants, you have no rights in this country, you have no right to ask anyone to move, you don't even pay taxes." The complainant goes on to say that she heard Justin Lickerman of Ronkonkoma, in substance, say to the woman, "Effing foreigners, you take all of our resources." He then threw beer in the woman's direction with her 10-year-old son looking on, according to the complaint. It's not clear which woman had beer thrown in her direction, the complainant or the victim, or which woman's son was present, because the complaint has been redacted. Now, while the... while the victim was not identified in the complaint, Elizabeth Edelkind and her family came forward and reported to News 12 that they were pressing charges against the couple, saying the two racially assaulted them as they rode the LIRR en route to a professional basketball game. Edelkind says she was called racial slurs and her family had beer thrown on them. In a video posted to Twitter, a man could be heard telling someone, "Don't effing look at me, I'm going to get arrested tonight." Okay, someone told him it's not worth getting arrested over, and he replied, "I know it's not worth it, but these effing foreigners aren't or ain't taking over my effing country." You know, I don't have to read more, but if you don't see the connection between what Lee Zeldin says, what Bruce Blakeman says, the anti-immigrant, ethnicity that is not theirs, the simplistic hatred that is espoused, and the people who support them with their pickup trucks and intimidation tactics, you got to pay more attention. This is inevitable. This is the kind of thing that happens. And, you know, we see the society around us beginning or continuing its downward spiral. And we have to fight back at every opportunity. And we have to expose this kind of thing at every opportunity. It's tragic. It's outrageous. And I hope that what we say is a small chip in the fascist armor that is being built all around us.
Yeah, we're watching.
Speaking of watching, everybody was watching that football game on Sunday. You were watching it and drew me into it, but it was Buffalo Bills and Kansas City Chiefs, two teams we have no interest in whatsoever, but for some reason... you know, everybody was on Twitter about this. Every politician, every celebrity, every individual person, it seemed. And boy, the score kept changing. It was the last 2 minutes of the game, and then one team scored, then the other team scored. One was winning, the other was winning. And then the last couple of seconds, the game was tied, so they had to go into overtime. And then this is where I had a problem, because I was happy that Buffalo had apparently won because, hey, they're a New York team. And, yeah, you might not realize that, but they're all the way up there on the tip. They're in New York, so, okay, why not? But then Kansas City got the ball. They won the coin flip. And apparently that's all they needed to win the game because the way overtime works in the NFL, or at least during the playoffs, is that the first team to score a touchdown wins. But the way football works, American football, very often you give a team the ball and they're going to score. If not a field goal, then a touchdown, and then the other team gets the ball and they have the potential to score in the same way. And sometimes it goes back and forth, exactly as he was doing in this game before overtime. But Buffalo never got the chance to even hold the ball. And that kind of overtime just doesn't sit right. I mean, you know, in regular football, global football, soccer, we call it, when you have an overtime period in a championship game, they used to have something called the golden goal. That was the first goal scored, and you win right there. People don't like that because it can happen too fast. But at least with that, both teams are touching the ball because that's how soccer works. You go back and forth. You change possession in a matter of minutes. American football isn't like that. It can be a half hour where one team is holding onto the ball and calling timeouts and things like that. But what they changed with soccer, with championship games, to have overtime periods. And I believe they have 2 15-minute overtime periods, which must be played in full, regardless of who scores and how many times in those periods. And that is true overtime. Something like that seems a lot fairer. There's this massive national conversation going on right now about precisely this. And it's just, it's interesting because, you know, I focus on all sorts of issues of justice and, fighting back against oppressive regimes and people. And lots of times I feel like nobody really cares, you know, nobody really responds. But this football overtime in a championship game in the NFL, everybody's responding to that. Everybody cares. Everyone's got something to say. Well, you know, let's transfer some of that enthusiasm over to the things that really count. I'm not saying the NFL doesn't really count. I would never say that. But there are other things out there, too, that will directly affect your lives. And if we all take an interest and we all say what's on our minds and we all engage in a spirited debate and reach some kind of resolution, we might have some hope yet.
Yeah, I felt that for a little bit when sports were not being played, that there was more space, more room, because people work, they're busy, and I guess when sports is there, it's sort of a comfort, and it is a real important unifying thing when we can't agree on things. That I understand, but I also see how the abundance of it can be very harmful to the things that do need real attention and unity on.
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
Even on this station, we spend a lot of time covering sports.
That's true. That's true. We do. Sports make the world go round, but I think we need to talk about other things as well. And we're going to do that now.
Yeah, it's not a sports station.
No. It's a movie station, and we are going back in time in our feature, Films of the Year That Was. And this is the feature, if you're not paying attention, where Kyle and I see a different film year by year, films that have won the Academy Award. We started back in the 1920s. We're up to 2012, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, which we saw two films. There's a domestic winner, and there's the international winner. Which would you like to start with, Kyle?
Well, would you like to... you know what?
I'm asking you.
Let's start with the more uplifting one. And
they were both really... Go ahead.
Of course, you would immediately recognize I'm talking about Amour, the international winner.
Oh, laugh riot, this film. My God.
French.
You know, if you are looking to boost your spirits and to just get out of the doldrums, go out right now and get Amour, which is the French word for love, from 2012, It's an Austrian production, even though they speak French. And boy, you will hate us, that's for sure, because it's anything but what I just described. Oh my God, this. You want to just get into very briefly what the plot is?
Sure.
Oh.
Torture.
Torture is what it was.
Retired music teachers with a daughter who lives abroad. The wife suffers a stroke that paralyzes her body. And
you gotta say it from the heart, not read it from a piece of paper. What you experienced, the pain that you went through last night when we saw this film, that's what you need to evoke
well,
here.
Well, first of all, the beginning of it was very interesting in that it just shows you all the credits.
No music.
No music, no sound. And I remember as I was sitting there, I rudely turned to you and said, I bet this is going to start loud. And the very first frame is them breaking in a door of the apartment because a smell was coming from the apartment. And basically, that is the present day, but the movie then goes several months before.
Not the present day. Almost the present day.
And
folks, just so you know, we're going to ruin these films. Both of these films. If you're looking to see these films, just understand we're going to tell you how they end. And if you're looking to be surprised, well, tune away because we're going to break that surprise.
You're trying to give alerts to people?
Well, you know, you have to warn them.
This is a radio station.
It's a sensitive era.
Serious alerts only.
Okay, so, you know, she's dead. She's dead.
She's real dead.
Way dead. And,
extra dead.
Stinking up the whole place.
Stinking to high
heaven.
And
they got the battering ram into the apartment, and there they are.
It was a pneumatic one. Kind of interesting.
It was kind of neat.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. Put it in the frame of the door, and then it uses a little airbag.
That's not present day because the very last scene of the film actually is a little beyond that because it's her daughter going through the now empty apartment.
Correct.
Yeah. Which you might, if you survive the 2 hours and 7 minutes, I counted every minute, you might not remember that, or you might be just so happy that it's almost over that you don't connect the two scenes.
Yeah, it's book what you would call like a bookend.
Mm-hmm.
And so the intervening hours are all about this couple, where essentially the husband and wife couple have their little routine, and
in Paris.
There's an odd moment where you're thinking everything is all right, but they're having a little breakfast, a small breakfast, and the wife suffers a stroke. She basically goes silent.
She goes catatonic.
Doesn't respond, and then comes back as soon as the husband went up to go get help.
Mostly comes back because she can't pour a cup of tea anymore with one of her sides. I think her right side, she can't pour a cup of tea.
Correct.
So then they go and they get her some kind of operation in the hospital, operation which goes badly.
Doesn't
and she
work.
Winds up being paralyzed on that side now. Great. Thank you, medical system. And now...
So the husband becomes full-time caregiver.
Full-time. And we get to see her slow decline. And,
exactly.
And the film is supposed to be about their... You know, the love for each other. It's not sentimental. Not at all. It's very clinical. Scenes go on for an extremely, unbearably long period of time.
It's agony.
It really is agony. It really is. You know? And when you realize that it's also reality in so many ways.
They do not hold any punches.
This is why the film won, because of its painful reality that it was portraying there. I got to say, you know, at one point, you know, when we were both basically trying to tear our own eyes out, I mentioned to you, Kyle, you know, she's acting right now. That she's acting, and that's, you know, made me feel a little better knowing that, okay, you know, she's not really that bad off, but you know, it does a little to make you forget that there's many people who are that bad off. So anyway, we see how the situation is dealt with relatives and nurses who come in to help and things like that. He kicks out one nurse for not treating her right. I wasn't exactly sure why. I guess she was combing her hair kind of roughly and talking to her like she wasn't really there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in America, I think we would consider that normal. But I was glad that he called her out on that.
It's incredibly difficult. This entire industry, it's worthy of critiquing and looking at here and around the world. and sort of how we cast and separate ages and social groups of people, generations of people, it can be very awful. The rationales and the putting away of people or what people take on. I have friends who've taken care of people, and it's just very hard. So this does not show this in a light way. I was really clinging to, you know, sometimes it isn't this much agony. Sometimes it's just here 1 minute, gone the next. Mm-hmm. So I and I'm also thinking of the people, the amazing stuff that's going on with various therapies and people using psychoactive substances, coming to terms with certain things in their life. And maybe the amount of quick intervention we have specifically for strokes now. So I don't know. I was trying to talk myself through, or at least bear it with some of that it didn't have to be quite as how they're portraying it, because there was so much that was just so heavy, and just the moaning and groaning and it's just, you see at one point he smacks her. He loses it.
Well, yeah, you know, he's trying to kind of force feed her water because she's refusing to take anything.
Yep.
And she spits it back at him, which I thought was pretty spirited. And he slaps her across the face. And they're both, you can see the shock in both of their faces. And
shame.
It's a horrible thing. You understand how it happened, why it happened, but it's still a horrible thing. And there are many, many instances like that where, I'll ruin the whole thing right now. In the end, he basically, you know, she's shouting out all kinds of things, and he comes in, he tells her a story about his childhood, and she starts sleeping, and right at that moment, he takes a pillow and suffocates her. And the thing that I liked about the film, not that, the thing that I liked is when he told the story, when she was asleep, that's when I saw the pillow for the first time, and the thought went through my head, just as it must have gone through his head at that moment. That was very well directed. So he grabs that pillow, which suddenly comes into sight, and does what seemed like the right thing to do at that moment, both to me and to him. And it was dark. It was very, very dark.
It's an emotional... an act of emotion, a crime of emotion. I don't know, but he and being overwhelmed and in despair, not knowing what to do or how to handle any more of this.
I don't know what happened to him after that, though. That's is a little confusing. He's just when they break down the door at the beginning of the film, which is at the end of the film, he's not around. So I don't know where he went at that point. And then when the daughter comes in later, he's not around then either. One scene, or actually, there was a pigeon that came in the window. And this pigeon was a really, really good actor, because he was basically going down the hallway, and then the husband sees the pigeon and shoots it out the window. But there's a lot of area for the pigeon to go, and he went to the right place. He knew where his marks were. The second pigeon scene, I think, was unnecessary. It dragged on for about 10 minutes, and basically the pigeon comes back, and the husband, this is after the wife has been killed, is trying to catch the pigeon. I think he eventually does, which is, wow, no small feat. But I don't see what the purpose of that, unless it was some kind of contractual thing with the pigeon.
To me, only substantiated that meandering aesthetic.
Oh, it did that,
holding
yeah.
on to something silly, something seemingly small,
mm-hmm.
to just make you a part of that wallpaper, but, or whatever. You know, you're there even for that.
But here's the thing. Depressing as this film was, I think I would have been depressed by the film even if they were both healthy and just living their lives. The apartment was just so dreary, and they had scenes where basically the two of them were just sleeping in bed, and it was just, you know, quiet, middle of the night. Just seemed so, I don't know, not lively. So, Amour, highly recommend it. Go out and see it if you really want a downer. Okay, we had the domestic winner in 2012, which was, what, Kyle?
I believe you're referring to the film Argo.
Yes, Argo, which for some reason I thought was about oil companies. That turns out to be a film called Syriana, which I saw years earlier. So I was confused. So I was happy to find out I don't think I'd ever seen this film before. This was about rescuing some of the hostages, or actually they weren't hostages in Tehran in 1979. They were six people who managed not to be hostages and basically escaped the American embassy and walked over to this Canadian house and were basically hiding out there.
Yeah, they were workers of the consulate there, and managed, because of their proximity to street access for people processing papers,
mm-hmm.
they were able to escape. And
they were able to escape the embassy. They still had to escape the country, and that's what the film revolves around: is how do we get these people out? There was an idea, and this is all based on reality. There's an idea to give them all bicycles and have them take a 300-mile ride to the border, all sorts of crazy things like that. But then the least bad idea, I think, is how they described it, is to actually have these six people be seen as film people who are there scouting locations for a science fiction film that somehow is involving Iran. And what they wind up doing, and they actually did this, making a whole fake production with stories and Variety and actors and screenwriters so that it could be verified, and then just sort of transferring all of this to those six people who are going to be defined as Canadians, who are wandering around Tehran looking at potential shooting sites, and then they would all leave on a plane and go to Switzerland after it was all over, and that was how they were planning to escape.
Yeah.
Right? Did I leave anything out?
Yeah, where did you want me to just jump right in? The guy's name is Menendez. Tony Mendez, and the Hollywood makeup artist is John Chambers.
Right. These are real people.
Played by John Goodman in this film. It's worth noting this was directed by Ben Affleck.
Yeah, that was
also
that was
starring him.
And
yeah,
the lead role, of course.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Argo. The script they eventually choose is sci-fi. I believe you already stated that.
Right.
And it's really worth noting the dynamic in the pre-storyline. They really go into the circumstances where the hostages were taken.
Right.
And it's a combination of, it's sort of a montage. You have file footage, you have news coverage, and images, all of that in conjunction with the dramatization with showing the area and the embassy and dramatizing the initial parts of it.
Well, you get to realize that
the Shah and
we bring all this about ourselves. You know, Iran had a democratically elected leader, You know that people wanted him as a leader, but then he began to nationalize the oil companies, and America and Great Britain didn't like that. So what did they do? They organized a coup and got rid of that guy and installed the person who we call the Shah of Iran, who basically was a brutal leader who the people hated. And that is what resulted in the 1979 revolution, where Ayatollah Khomeini was put in power. Would not have happened had we not meddled so much and interfered with democracy. But it did. And that is why all this happened. That's why so many things have happened in the past. We do it to ourselves.
Yes, beware energy. It's controversial,
mm-hmm.
and people get concerned with where the energy comes from and where it's going, and everybody has an opinion about it and wants to know and influence that process. So yeah, whatever you're talking about, it's important
mm-hmm.
to see the really long-term effects of it. But
yeah,
anyway,
to this day.
This film had unique access to the CIA. It talked about something that had been classified for quite a long time, and you really don't hear this kind of stuff at all. Methods, techniques, and the true story itself. You know, it really is harrowing, and I think shows a lot of the crossover between the immense talents in the fields of entertainment and There was some good extra features we watched that go into all of that, just basically how well-suited this makeup artist was to moonlight and help along. And it reminds me, you know, a lot of the entertainment, Bond or spy movies or Mission Impossible, that had various elements of doing makeup and disguises and so forth. So I had seen this before. I knew what this was going into it. There's a pretty good ensemble of actors, and I don't know how much more we can say about it. It's a pretty big production. It was incredible to see how Canada had a lot of credit initially as well.
Well, because they did it, they deserve the credit, absolutely. But the emphasis was to not credit the CIA, because if they did that, then there'd be backlash against the remaining hostages, and people didn't want that. But there was a lot in the film that was exaggerated for Hollywood. For instance, everything wasn't up to the second when they finally went to the airport to leave.
Oh, that was ridiculous.
They actually just got through. It was no big deal. It was completely boring. Nobody checked. They got on the plane and they left. But in this version, it's very tense. They have to make a phone call to Hollywood to confirm that the film company exists. The people there are basically unable to get into the office because there's a fake fight scene going on with a cop outside in the studio, and they get into their office and pick up the phone the very last moment when the person in Tehran is about to hang up. And then the people at the airport find out that the whole thing is a ruse, and they literally go out onto the tarmac and chase the airplane as it's trying to take off with police cars and guns and all kinds of things like that, but the plane makes it just at the last second. None of that happened. None of that happened. It was kind of absurd. Probably the worst part, though, is they kind of painted all of Iran with one broad brush and made it seem like everybody was, you know, in on this. Everybody hated the Americans, and there was a lot of opposition. There was a lot of anger in the streets because of what had been done over the past few decades. But it wasn't quite as evil as I think it came off. Still, it was a good romp. It was definitely a lot more action than Amour. Everybody got home in the end.
There was so much good period stuff. The automobiles, the technology. The first scenes when they're rushing, there may be more of those kinds of exaggerations and stuff you pointed out, but I love just seeing the diplomatic things, the procedures and stuff that they had to go through, breaking up things and incinerating them. The incinerator jams, then they have to shred things. Then the shredding becomes their undoing because the Iranians have children reassembling.
I don't know
the
about
shreds.
The children, but they did put back shredding. And yeah, to their credit, they defeated our system.
They put that in there. And just the detail, it was incredible. There's stuff like that with history. You got to do it right.
Okay, so Argo, that was the winner from 2012, and we move on to 2013. Hey, we are out of time. Finn is up next. You can write to us with your comments and criticisms, otw@2600.com. Please continue to listen to WUSB, the most dangerous station in the nation.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Been spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. Been spending most of their lives living in a pastime paradise. Been wasting most of their time glorifying days long gone behind. Been wasting most of their days in remembrance of ignorance, so disgrace. Tell me who of them will come to be? How many of them are you and me? Dissipation, isolation, consolation, segregation, dispensation, isolation, exploitation, mutilation, mutation, miscreation, confirmation to the evils of the world. And spending most of their lives living in the future.
the day that sorrow's lost sometimes. They keep telling of the day when the Savior of love will come to stay. Tell me who of them will come to be. How many of them are you and me? Proclamation, a race to nations, consolation, integration, verification of revelation, acclamation, world salvation, vibration, stimulation, confirmation to peace of the world. And spending most of our lives living in the past time paradise. And spending most of their lives living in the past time paradise. They've been spending most of their lives living in a future paradise. They've been spending most of their lives living in a future paradise. We've been spending too much of our lives living in a past.